Welcome to Crooners and Coffee Shops, everyone. My name is Heather. Today I have LJR here. Woot,
woot. What's up, Heather? Thank you for having me.
Yeah. To start us off, we'd love to hear a little bit about how you got started in music.
Sure. So I got started playing drums when I was about five. That was my first instrument. I really only started because my dad was in a band and we'd be his roadies. And eventually my older brother, Daniel, took up guitar. And that was, he was about 2 years older than me. So he was about seven. And I remember thinking to myself when I was five, dang it, now I have to learn an instrument. And that was kind of the first way that that happened. And I picked drums because I was like, it's definitely the easiest. Like you just hit stuff. Like I don't have to do all those complicated, you know, fingerings on, you know, the piano or anything like that or on the guitar. So that was way easier to just like hit stuff with sticks. So that's kind of how I got started doing it. I grew up playing in church for a really long time, starting when I was about 10, a ton of adult services, all the youth services. That was kind of like this huge, huge thing for me. And I just fell in love with the music and the culture there. Although I'm not really part of that anymore. That was a big part of my experience. So there's a lot of songs where you can hear some of the influences like Hillsong, you know, United or other places like that, that really add like a anthemic, nostalgic longing sense. I still like it a lot, but I kind of drew a lot of that for a big part of my sound. So I did that till I was about 22. And throughout that period, I played a lot with my brothers as well. We had a band called Band of Brothers. That's actually on Spotify, technically, although I think most people don't know that it's my music. And yeah, then I really focused on school for a long time because my parents were like, yeah, you really want to make sure you got a backup plan and all this stuff. I honestly didn't really know what I wanted to do. So if somebody was like, hey, you should do music, which my older brother was very much pushing for. I didn't really know that that's what I wanted to do. So I don't know, I probably wouldn't have chosen that anyway at the time, but my parents really pushed me into engineering. So I did that, eventually went to grad school for it in a PhD program at the University of Maryland College Park, and just realized about 4 years in, so I only had 1 year left until I was done, that I was not happy doing this research, you know, mechanical engineering stuff. And like, I had a really cool project too, working on this. It was autonomous aerobatics and navigation in robotic birds. So making a robotic bird and then making it fly around and fly itself and do some, you know, modeling that would allow it to figure out how to control itself when it's doing things like flips or dives and things like that. But I wasn't happy doing that. And there's a lot of things that I didn't even know were going on from my upbringing in church and family and stuff like that, that created a pretty challenging context for me to even know what I really truly wanted. So after a lot of self-reflection and a lot of encouragement from my brother, I decided to quit the PhD program and try to choose intentionally and figure out like, what in the world do I really want for my life? And that was, I did kind of whittle it down to three general directions that I knew, like these are the things that make me come alive, you know, creating art, empowering people and building meaningful relationships. So whatever I wanted to do, whatever I was going to do after that needed to be really fitting into those three categories. So music was my main art form. And now since then, there's been more like video and film that's come into it as well. And then, you know, empowering people and creating relationships, all those things happen, you know, through music as well. So yeah. And then I was like, well, Daniel and I tried to do a music thing for a while as a duo, and that didn't work, you know, family stuff. You thought you worked through and didn't really all the way. And then after that, I just started doing the solo thing, doing a lot of covers online, and eventually realized like I want to put out my original stuff. So the couple of years I've been working on developing that, and now I'm in this series of actually releasing my debut solo album. So that's kind of like way back when all the way to where I am now, basic summary of the music stuff.
It's a crazy journey. Like having the family aspect of music is usually a common thing, you know, and like it's awesome that you were able to have that journey and then also have like a completely different almost life in a way with the engineering thing, and then you retried it again with your family, and it's like giggling a little bit where you're like, it's your family, and you know, sometimes you think you'll get past things, and it's like, oh, I feel like family, we could get extra petty because it's family.
Yeah, because it's easy to take a family for granted sometimes. You're like, well, they'll always be there. Like, we don't have good enough boundaries to like actually say no, you know. But yeah, I mean, I guess that is one of the things that, you know, is beautiful about family, is if even though things can get really tough, like, I mean, it's not true in all family contexts, and it's always really sad when it's not, you know, there's a lot of things that can really damage that trust. But in a lot of cases, there is at least something that feels like it's just a different connection with your family, that even though things are really messed up and you can always kind of go back and try to figure something out and have some sort of support. As messed up as that support may be in some way, and even if they don't know how to give it exactly in the way that you need it, there can still be something there when you're really, really struggling. So
yeah, absolutely. Shout out to supportive families everywhere. Yes,
absolutely. And all the families that are supporting by working through their own stuff, because that's really the, I think that's the biggest thing, is like the more that you're becoming aware of how the dynamics in yourself are happening, the more that you're able to bring that to a conversation and be a meaningful contributor in actually making those dynamics be different and to cause less damage and to be a part of the healing in that experience.
Absolutely. Growth is the biggest step that you can absolutely take in life. And you're gearing up to release your debut album, When the Sky Began to Fall, and we are so excited.
And thank you.
Like you said, it was a long time coming, and it's going to be awesome seeing the fruition of your music journey. And kind of wanted to ask if you would like to share a little bit about what the listeners should expect lyrically and instrumentally.
Sure. I'll start with the instrumentals. There's a wide variety of general musical styles on this album. Instrumentally, there's a lot of different genres that I like to do or that I like to engage in. So it spans a lot of different styles. It kind of starts off with more of like Daniel Powder, you know, that Daniel Powder Bad Day song that it went viral like forever ago. As the opening track is called I Can't Say, and it kind of has a similar vibe to that, as well as Brighter Days by Leland, which is one of my favorite songs growing up in about the high school time frame. And so it's kind of more like a laid back rock, pop rock ballad kind of thing with almost like a country guitar solo a little bit. But then after that, it goes very mainstream, top, you know, 40s kind of pop with More Time and Need a Little Lovin'. And I'd say probably, you know, More Time is more so a band Camino, almost a little bit of a One Direction Katy Perry vibe. And Need a Little Lovin' really takes a left turn by maintaining that general type of style, a little bit more 1975, and then bringing in my close friend Gurpreet Sareen, who was my college roommate. And he's a North Indian classical trained singer, and he plays tabla as well. So we bring in that style, and that just totally changes the whole kind of game of what it feels like, and just blends completely different cultures together. And I love that. And we've collaborated since college and throughout college in a lot of ways, where we played like U2 songs together, and his whole family would come up, and you know, they'd play their sitar, and like they'd all sing and stuff. And it was really this blend of, you know, Eastern and Western cultures together, and something that was just awesome. And they're all six, you know, too. So it's very visually different, too. You know, they've got their turbans and everything. And it was very powerful for me, because it brought together a lot of these portions of my life, which I feel like mentally I've kind of kept separate. And I think when you ask, and then from there, it kind of progresses on to a lot of different styles, from like, you know, Coldplay, almost like some ex-Ambassadors jungle kind of sound, to like a Billy Joel sort of piano and singing ending, and some Peter Gabriel kind of vibes. But in terms of the lyrical themes, one of the biggest things about this album is trying to create a new identity for yourself after you've kind of lost everything. And it's weird how this all kind of came together for me, because I didn't start off creating the album as like, oh, well, I want to tell a story about creating a new identity or working through my trauma. But I discovered as I was putting all the songs together, specifically as I was recording it and trying to come up with visuals for like, well, what do I want, you know, the music videos to be about? That was really what the journey was about, was trying to, after losing my entire identity of who I thought I was and what gave me a foundation, to create something new that had just as deep of a meaning, if not more so, and then to try to work through the stuff that had happened to me growing up in youth group and in church and my family and all that stuff, and trying to figure out how to move through that. So one of the biggest things that happens when you grow up in a Christian environment, especially if it's like an evangelical fundamentalist type of environment, is like this extreme fear of what's different and who's different. It's very much a us versus them kind of mentality, as much as they try to cast it as not that way. So it's very, you know, exclusionary at its core, you know, in this idea. I mean, it's supposed to be inclusionary, like, oh, God loves everybody. But functionally, it ends up being like, we are the saved and you are not. And we don't want you to kind of muddy what we're trying to do and create something that's, you know, this experience with God and everything. So bringing in Gurpreet was just one of these really amazing things that I loved doing, that it's just a representation of me embracing the world that was completely outside of what I knew. And instead of reacting out of fear to something that's so different, instead to embrace that and embrace people that are really different from me, it was just a really cool thing. So that's one of my favorite songs on the album. And we're actually trying to come up with exactly what we're going to do for the visuals for that. And because I definitely want to have him in the video and try to figure out some way that we would both really be excited about portraying that type of idea. So we're actually talking about that. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but with this debut album, there's like a series of videos that come out. So 12 independent short films that go along with the songs and tell a cohesive story that goes together. So he'll be in that third one.
I absolutely love having the accompanying visual aspects to it, especially for like an entire work. And like, I know Fall Out Boy did it with Save Rock and Roll. And then also there's an artist that I interviewed. Her name is Mackenzie Nicole, did the same thing. And like, I am so excited that you like announced that. And also I feel for your story about, you know, growing up in a religious household, religious life and stuff. I grew up Catholic. My entire life kind of just ended up being a complete 180. And like, mm-hmm. I love all of the musical comparisons and inspiration that you also listed out as well. It's like, it's making me really excited for this album.
Well, yeah, I really hope you like it, Heather. I'm really pumped about it because it feels like it's the truest thing that I've done with my art ever. In terms of like actually speaking my own experience out into the world and really being fully honest about that. Because for so long, especially in that church context, there's so much shame and fear that are used as control mechanisms. And I wouldn't, you know, say that they're necessarily consciously used by people at the top to intentionally try to maintain control. I'm sure that there are many contexts where they are, but at least in my experience, I don't feel like I look at those people and go, oh, they were trying to shame me and like trying to damage me to keep me in this spot of submission. But so much of my life was controlled by, you know, thinking that I needed to fit into that world, being afraid of what they would think and not having that, you know, that I'd so committed to that world that I didn't have my own sense of a real personal identity. Everything was, you know, literally what they would say is like, put your identity in Jesus, like empty yourself and be a vessel for God to do his work. All of what you do in your life only has meaning and value if you are able to use that for God's kingdom. Everything else is meaningless because this is literally like we're saving people from hell, you know, and that's what it's all about. And like, do you even really love somebody if you're not trying to get them to believe the gospel? Like, you must hate this person so much, you know, and I see like these videos go viral on TikTok and it makes me really pissed off with how ignorant it is. And like, I get that this person probably does consciously come from a place of like, I really actually want to help. But as I've grown and started to see more of the dynamics that happen that are so complex inside of us, I've been realizing that it's usually that type of thing is more of an expression of an unmet need that we have that hasn't been healed. And it's working itself out through this other dynamic where in this particular context, we feel like we can get it met. And it may be like a temporary stopgap, but that's kind of the best that it is. And it typically ends up also resulting because it's not healed. It ends up with this person trying to exert their external narrative on the rest of the world in a way that continues the damage instead of actually engaging with what happened and healing that so that you no longer need to, you know, have that kind of control.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that whoever listens to your album and all of your future songs in a way will get that aspect. So I wanted to go into, you know, you released three singles. You mentioned I Can't Stay, More Time, and Need a Little Lovin'. And mm-hmm. you've also released a bunch of cover songs as well. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask, like, how has the recording, the songwriting for, you know, your original works and also the marketing aspect come into each other, whether it's similar or different from each other?
Hmm. Yeah. So I guess that's a good question. When I did the recording and the songwriting is very different for all of them. They all happened at different times. So like, I Can't Say I recorded and well, I wrote when I was about 19. So that was like, you know, 12 years ago now. And More Time was probably 4 years ago. Maybe five. And then Need a Little Lovin' was like maybe 2 years ago or so. The context for when I wrote them were all a little bit different. You know, of course, when you're 19, you're just like going into college. And I was just trying to write a song that I thought would be encouraging to my friends. And it was, you know, very interesting how like a decade later, like re-looking at the lyrics, they have a completely different meaning to me now. And in a strange way, kind of foreshadowed what my journey would be, which I thought was just so interesting. And so that's kind of how I've cast it in the video series and kind of how I look at it in terms of the greater work of this particular album project. But the other two, more time I just wrote in the studio with my mixing engineer, Felix, who's a good friend of mine. He was just like, hey, dude, let's write a song. And then Need a Little Lovin' just kind of came out of me one night a couple years ago after a relationship was ending. And I didn't even know what I was really writing it about. I just tried to imagine a particular, once I came up with the basic idea of the hook and then the chorus, I imagined a specific context in a relationship and just tried to write about what that was, what was going on in that from a very like specific point of view. And then later I came to realize like, oh, this very much fit into, you know, a dynamic that I saw in myself for such a long time because I've been so controlled by other relationships in my family or in church that I needed to feel a sense of control in my own life. And I hadn't had enough of that yet where moving back into a committed relationship would not feel triggering to me where I was just like a huge loss of freedom. There's this contradiction in my experience between like I had to choose between either getting the love that I so desperately wanted and needed and this freedom that I needed. So like I really needed like so much love, but I couldn't get it without giving up the freedom and I couldn't give up the freedom. So that dynamic would like ultimately mess up the relationship. So that's like from the songwriting point of view, all the recording was pretty similar. I kind of laid out all the songs and we kind of went through and did, you know, all the drums and all the bass and all the guitar and kind of went through like that. And we did that all in this past year. The marketing so far has been pretty similar. You know, I'm working with Erica and Muddy Paw PR to do the general promo. And then I have an automated marketing system that I have set up that runs ads and brings people, you know, into like a Facebook Messenger bot. They talk with the bot a little bit. It shares the song with them. If they like the song, then it signs them up for the email list, tags them appropriately based on whatever actions they've taken, gets them to sign up for text notifications, presents them with free offers, like a free plus shipping thing or, you know, like a VIP bundle or my Patreon and all that kind of stuff. And then there's like an involved email sequence that goes out that, you know, gives them a bunch of free stuff like song downloads and things like that. It all happens automatically and just runs as things are going. And that just brings in new fans kind of regularly. And then typically I'm also doing, you know, some Spotify promotion, running ads for that. And then some, you know, pitching to some playlisters as well. That's obviously, you got to be careful with that because you can easily get somebody who like, they're just doing it for the money and they pitch to people that aren't going to be good fits for your music and, you know, might have a ton of bots. But in this case, thankfully, I know the guy pretty well. So I trust him that that's not what's going on. So, and the results, you know, aren't like crazy in the sense of something that's out of line for what I expected to get for working with him. So that's been really good.
Cool. I mean, it sounds like marketing wise, you've got like a really good game plan. And like, it was really interesting to hear about in the terms of the singles that you've released and how they've kind of had multiple meanings throughout your life. And that's like, it's crazy how sometimes you can hear a song and it can mean one thing and then you can hear it eons later and it can be a completely different message to you.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy because that's the power of music and it affects our life, whether we consciously are aware of it or not. And artists like you that are willing to share their story about, hey, this song used to mean this 12 years ago, and now it means this in today's world and stuff is awesome.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I was just thinking about that the other day in terms of how art functions in this weird way where like, when you create your piece of art, like until you share it with the world, it's kind of yours and there's only kind of whatever meaning you've injected into it. But once you share it with the world, it's almost like not even yours anymore because the way that I look at the art is kind of almost like the experience that is created through the collaboration of the artist and the viewer or the experience, you know, and that's always going to be unique with every person. So when you create your artwork, you made it in a certain context, but somebody else brings their unique set of experiences, which creates a whole new experience when they're interacting with your art. And that is like a new art piece. And that's what I look at and say, like, that's the actual art in my mind. And what's fascinating is that it's not just limited to other people experiencing your art. When you've actually had enough separation from your own stuff for 12 years or however long, you can actually be that person who goes back to what you did before and experience it. You bring a whole new set of experiences to it as well. So now you're able to interact with that previous self and with that art in a way that creates a whole new experience for yourself. And that, I think, brings a lot of really deep meaning. And I can't say specifically it's had a lot of meaning for me in that way because, you know, I thought I knew everything about who I was when I wrote that song. And I thought like, well, you know, the idea was like, I'm going to write this to my friends who are, you know, struggling and trying to figure stuff out. But like, and I can't say what's going to happen, but somehow things are going to turn out okay. And of course, in my mind, a lot of that was based on my ideas of what reality was, who God was, knowing all these things, blah, blah, having faith. And my experience changed so much, and I could never have said what was going to happen and how I would fall away from my faith in the way that I did and totally change course. So the lyrics of it, of like literally not knowing what's going to happen or which way the wind will blow, but you know, one day we'll wake up and this will be a dream, like really rung just so true for me to be able to end it, especially now to look back and say like, yeah, like I hardly even remember being that person anymore because life is just so different now. It literally feels like that was almost a dream, you know, and I'm just in such a different place now. So.
Woo, yeah. For growth, personal growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of staying on the topic of like marketing, you know, social media goes along with that. And I wanted to ask, do you feel that there is an unspoken pressure that's placed on creatives to kind of always have something to share with their audience?
Oh, totally. I think it's awful because what it does in my mind, I mean, I guess there's two things. There's, it can be used as a way to always create something new and just always have a motivation to make something. And that can be helpful for some artists, but for a lot of artists, like for myself and for a lot of people I know, it's exhausting. And you end up doing this thing that I'll just call like trend following or trend tracking, or if you want a more hip term, it's like you're just creating for the trends and you're not creating something that's honest and true of your own experience from deep reflection that has a really powerful meaning that's coming from inside your own heart as much. It's a lot harder to track trends and do that constantly and inject something that's really true and honest to you on that sort of frequency. So I think it's terrible how social media is, you know, so motivated by that. I mean, it makes sense because obviously social media is motivated by money. They want to keep people on the app to do that. If you're going to get, you know, lots of followers, so you got to compete with everybody else and make all this content and blah, blah, blah. And like, I get it from that point of view, but I think it's awful. And I also don't want to be on social media constantly at the mercy of TikTok or Facebook or whatever. So that's part of why the automated marketing system helps a lot, because somebody who, like, you can pay to put your stuff in front of the right people, you can do the targeting and really increase the likelihood that people are going to like your music. And when you do that, your experience is going to be very, very different, because now you're not just trying to follow these trends and hope that you get new followers. Your music's always being put in front of new people who might become fans. And if they've never heard your song before, this is their first time hearing the song. It's a new song to them. So it doesn't matter if it's 2 years old. There is still a new fan that could be brought in to be part of your community. And that's huge, because that means that now you can focus on making really good content that's honestly who you are and just put those pieces of content regularly in front of new people. And you can always bring in new fans just using an automated system and not be trying to like follow the trends and like create, oftentimes it's almost like you're just making content to make content. And I don't want to say that it's like completely worthless, because I love a lot of the content out there that people make. But it's just not the same as if you're, you know, creating something that's honest from a deep reflection of who you are as a person. And that can just be really challenging for a lot of artists to do on that kind of scale and frequency.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you said, like, I don't want to be a slave to social media, because it's like, I feel like in the recent, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's practically surpassed conventional forms of marketing, and you know, is a different kind of way for consumers to be put in front of a product or a brand or an artist and such. Mm-hmm. And in a way, like, I mean, I feel the pressure, and I'm not even a musician and stuff.
Totally.
So I wanted to ask you a fun question. If you could choose 3 artists to go on a world tour with, who would you choose and what would you name your tour?
Ooh, I've definitely never thought about this question. I mean, I would definitely go with Peter Gabriel, probably Coldplay. And the third one, I don't totally know. Oh, actually, it probably would be Switchfoot. That'd probably be who I would go with. I don't know if that combination would make sense altogether, but those are just some of my absolute biggest influences. And yeah, I don't know what I would call my tour. Huh, what would I call my tour?
We ask the hard questions here on Crooners and Coffee Shops.
Right, exactly. The stumpers.
So simple, but also so thought-provoking.
Exactly. This is a really great question. I'm trying to figure out like how long I can be thinking for before it becomes too long for the question time.
Luckily, we're not on Jeopardy and there's no music playing.
True. Let's see. What would I call my tour? It makes me think of like, you know, what's the core kind of idea of the album? A lot of the terms that come naturally to my brain end up being a little bit too biblical, and that's not how I want to present. But of course, that just comes naturally because of my upbringing. know, I like the phrase mirror glass, maybe. A lot of it is tied into this idea of this monocle piece, which I guess our listeners can't see. But if you watch the opening video, the opening chapter for the album, there's this magic monocle that I find when I leave my favorite coffee shop, which is how the whole thing opens. That's kind of funny that we're talking today. And I look through this monocle and it like changes the whole world. And I start to see the world as it really is, which is like with crazy planets in the sky and like everything is not quite so normal as I had thought. And the idea of that, part of why I love this piece so much is because it reflects how I used to think that I saw the world clearly, but I only saw through a lens. And it fits very interestingly into a verse in 1 Corinthians where Paul says, you know, I see into a glass, we see into a glass darkly. And that has always really resonated with me since, you know, really focusing on this album. And kind of like what we were talking about earlier with things that you kind of interpret one way and then later bring a whole different experience, you bring your different set of experiences to. I've started to look at some of the scripture that way as well, where before I was like, oh, it all has to fit together exactly in this perfect way. And like, it's all exactly God's word and like, got to do it exactly, exegesis and, you know, anything else is, you know, heresy and wrong and blah, blah, and make sure it's everything in the perfect context. And I just don't think that way anymore. So I feel a little bit more free to take some creative license with some of these passages and to notice like, oh, that really hits me powerfully in this particular moment. And I don't have to like make sure that it's done in the exact perfect Jesus context. For those of you who don't know what that is, that means you're like properly pulling out of the scripture what's there using proper historical context and, you know, interpretation and looking throughout the entire book and making sure everything fits together right. As opposed to just being like, well, I want it to mean X. So therefore, I'm going to take this isolated verse and make it whatever I want. I feel a little bit more comfortable doing the second one in the sense of like, I'm not taking this book as like core foundation for my life anymore. And there's deep meaning that I can pull out of it that's very real to my story without feeling like I'm some sort of heretic or something like that. Yeah, maybe the lens tour or the mirror glass tour. I'm not sure. Because it's very central to the whole concept in the story.
I love it. I think a lot of people would relate to that as well. Almost like the term rose-colored glasses in a way.
Yeah.
It's like you think, you know, everything's all hunky-dory and it's really not. And you're just like, right, in this la-la land, like thinking, yeah, just like faking it till you make it and stuff. And then all of a sudden it comes crashing down and you're like, oh my God, why? What is happening? Then you lose your mind. I go through that like once a month. It's fine.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
This is why I listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps me sane.
Yep.
If you could give your younger self any advice in regards to what you've experienced within music or within your life in general, what advice would you give him?
Well, I guess it's interesting because I feel like there's the advice that I'm trying to figure out, like, I have an initial thought of like, well, this is what I think the person needs to do of my former self. And then there's like, well, what would I actually say that I would hear? And the first thing that comes to my mind is actually when I asked that question to Marky Ramone from the Ramones. I got to meet him on a plane ride coming back from the Grammys in 2010. I won an international songwriting competition. And so, you know, as you're flying back, of course, and part of that was a prize to the Grammys to go and see it. So on the way back, of course, you typically end up being on a plane with some low level celebrity or somebody that might be a little bit more famous. So we met him and talked to him a little bit in the airport, and we asked him like, hey, what advice would you give to us? And because there was me and my brother and, you know, just starting off musicians, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And he was like, if anybody tells you that you can't do something, tell them to go fuck themselves. And that always honestly stood out to me. And somebody had asked me something like that recently. And like, that would be the thing I would tell myself is like, you got to really believe in yourself. And if people are telling you other stuff, tell them to go fuck themselves. And I don't know if I could do that or take that advice. I mean, obviously, when I heard it the first time from Marky Ramone, I had no idea what to even do with that. But I think that would be the biggest thing, followed by like really take time to think about what you want. Don't prioritize other people over yourself. Don't sacrifice yourself in a way that's unhealthy. Like, it's okay to make sacrifices for other people, but don't take responsibility for other people's problems and for their emotions. And that was a trap that I was caught in for most of my life until maybe even just the past couple of years, where I started to identify that and started to get out. But I still notice myself doing that. So those are a couple of things. There's like so many things I would tell myself back then, you know, if I could go back and be like, hey, you know, it's like, think about what you really want. And it's okay if you want something else. And if something that you want ends up hurting somebody else, that's actually not necessarily a bad thing. Like, pain in and of itself is not wrong. Pain is just information that's telling you what's happening. I mean, it's sometimes telling you the truth, which can be difficult to hear and painful because it's not what the other person wants. But that doesn't mean that it's actually a bad thing. You're actually going to hurt this person longer if you don't tell them the truth and let them to continue to believe that things are different between you, and you're actually preventing yourself and that person from having a real relationship and yourself from being seen if you're not willing to actually show up as you truly are.
Absolutely. That's very sound advice and extremely relative, regardless of if it's a romantic relationship or a platonic friendship or even like family members can have some toxic aspects as well. And if you could go back in time, you would be giving yourself really good advice overall.
Yeah. I guess the proof that they always say that time travel isn't possible is that, well, we haven't had somebody come back yet. So somebody would have come back to this time by now is what we think, right? But who knows? Maybe it's some weird parallel universe thing where if we do get to the point where you can go back in time, you're not actually going back to the time that you were in. You're going back to like a parallel universe version of it, whatever it is. I don't know.
It's a whole multiverse, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going
yes,
to be.
Exactly. Like the Flash and all that stuff.
Yeah, buddy. Before we get into comic book talk, because that'll just go on for hours. What do you hope that your audience will take away from your music?
I hope that my audience will take away from my music a sense of hope that things can get better, that no matter how difficult things feel and how hopeless things get for you, that there is a way out of that, regardless of the situations and the things that you've been through. And I hope that my music can provide some sort of temporary rest for people going through something like that. And that hopefully with what I'm trying to build with, you know, my online community within, I call it the LJR Syndicate, it's a Facebook group, that hopefully people can find some support and community where maybe they didn't really have that before, they're struggling. But I'm trying to shift over a lot of what I engage upon in that group to be some of the things that I've learned over my life about trauma, how that affects us, things that we can do to heal, how to try to normalize that process, and, you know, try to encourage people to work on their self-healing to be able to get through that. So that's what I would hope that people would take away from it.
Absolutely. And I, from what you've already told me about the songs that are going to be included on the album and probably also future works as well, I have a strong feeling that they're going to receive that from your music.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, Heather. I'm very much, very much hoping that they do.
Yeah. And to end off the interview portion, we've got a debut album coming out. You got all these music videos. You're working on a music video tutorial. But what other things should we be expecting from you in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is definitely kind of doing all of the videos. Those are coming out. They're supposed to come out one per month. I got in an ATV accident, so that meant that I fractured my hip. So I was kind of out and I can't really do a whole lot for a couple of months in terms of filming. So I'm a little bit behind on the videos, but that's going to start back up again in September. So at that point, you know, one song and one video per month. But then other than that, my hope is to be able to start to put a band together by the end of the year, if I can kind of get everything else on track and working really well, and then hopefully start touring, you know, sometime next year. And then I'd say, I mean, the other thing I'm doing, and I haven't told everybody this yet, just yet, but I'm working on a fundraising app for nonprofits that's going to help people and businesses multiply their giving to those organizations. So we're hoping to release that in the next couple months. We're waiting on a nonprofit designation. We had to actually launch a nonprofit to make this whole thing happen. So pretty excited about that. A lot of things kind of in the works. But yeah, I'm mainly just excited to keep these songs getting out there, optimizing all of my business aspects of it with the marketing to try to get as many people to hear it as possible and just see what the future holds with that.
Yeah, a lot of exciting things in the future for sure. And where can everyone find you online?
So typically online, my username is Luke Justin Roberts, which is what LJR stands for. I tried to change it all over to LJR, but either that name was taken or in most cases, you actually can't have a username that's that short in often cases. So that is kind of disappointing. Like YouTube wouldn't even let me do it because I needed like one more character and the same thing in a couple other spots. And of course, Twitter like won't even let me do my full name. It's like one character too long to do Luke Justin Roberts. So I had to do like Luke J. Roberts instead. But yeah, typically just search for Luke Justin Roberts online. or LJR Music. I'm not quite socially relevant enough to hit just the LJR homepage. You might be able to, and if you do, like, definitely let me know. Send me a message. I would love to know if I've kind of hit that level. But yeah, just LJR or Luke Justin Roberts is the best way to find me.
Yes. Everybody spam Luke with the screenshots of the Google page.
Yes, exactly.
Look, there you are. You're right there.
Get that SEO up.
And to go into our coffee shop appreciation portion here at Crooners and Coffee Yes. Shops. We love our coffee, obviously. Mm-hmm. I actually have a fun shout out. So I went with a few friends. You know, Vax Girl Summer, all of us were vaccinated and there was like eight of us. We all went out to Tahoe, but we wanted to make it fun and went on a little kind of like little out of the way, make it a little road trip. And in Lone Pine, California, there is a cafe and bakery called Alabama Hills Cafe. And they have really good French dip, first of all, and these giant ass pies. And I like really wanted to take one home because they looked really good. But also we had to drive like 6 more hours. And they filmed like a lot of stuff there because they had these really cool rock formations. And we like have a few pictures like in front of them and stuff. But it's really, really cool. I can't even imagine how it looks at nighttime with like the stars and stuff. But some of the films that they have filmed in that area, because they had like this cool little brochure like on the menu of like all these film scenes. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is Iron Man. That is the desert scene where he's like, ah.
That's awesome.
And they also filmed Django there, as well as Tremors and like a bunch of other Westerns too. It's very, very much like Western City. So shout out to Alabama Hills Cafe. Luke, do you have any coffee shops and cafes that you'd like to shout out in your neck of the woods?
Absolutely. So I am a coffee fiend. This is probably my third cup of coffee just today. And I'm a big sucker for like the sweet mochas and those kind of lattes with all the cool latte art. So I'm always looking for like where's got, you know, one of those. And there's so many because I find literally every single one and try it out. But my current favorites are down in Laurel, Maryland, which is actually where I grew up. There's one called Sip It C Street Flats. This one is just awesome. They make some of the best lattes that I've ever had. I've probably had more of their lattes than any other coffee shop that I've ever been to. And they also have, you know, all sorts of things like avocado toast. They've got like a really cool environment inside. You know, they've used a lot of like refurbished old things like faucets and pipes to build custom lighting fixtures and things like that, that are just really hipster and cool. And the staff is just really friendly and a lot of fun. So you go in there and like, they know your name. They're really going to talk to you and engage with you. And it's really become kind of a community staple. So I love that. The other spot that I really like is, well, I guess, I don't know. There's so many options. Probably the other one that I like the most because of the vibe is called Atwaters, and it's in Catonsville. There's two of them. One's in Baltimore, but I like the one in Catonsville because there's more of a substantial menu than most coffee shops. Like you can get like proper food there, but there's a whole upstairs where it's like this back staircase that like you go up that's really nice and thin. And there's this huge refurbished like old area upstairs with all these, you know, tables and stuff. And you just feel like you found this secret hideaway kind of spot to sit down and like work for hours, you know, with your laptop and your cup of coffee. And of course, there's an ice cream shop super close by. So if you're looking for ice cream, you can just head over there. So
if you didn't get your sugar rush from the coffee, you could get your sugar rush at the ice cream.
Exactly. And then of course, I love to trail run. So the trails are right by there. So I can make a combo trip of that if I want.
You could get all caffeinated and then do your trail and then come back and get more caffeinated.
Exactly. And then stay up and, you know, make something cool and then go trail running at night or something. I don't know.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was awesome getting in the chat with you.
Thank you, Heather. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me and asking all these cool questions. It's really great to be here and to share.
Yeah. We're super excited for all of the releases that you've got planned, including your app. It sounds amazing. And we can't wait to see all the news articles about it for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Heather. Yeah. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I hope that you're staying safe, staying healthy. And to our listeners, stay safe out there, everyone, and stay caffeinated.